into the open public input section, and Tess, you will be lining up the people by to speak occasionally. Each of you that will address the commission will be allowed 3 minutes. You will hear a buzzer go off, and we'll go ahead and get started with that. Tess, who do we have to start with?
Sure. So for folks who want to give public comment, please make sure that your hand is raised. So if you've joined via the phone, that's going to be *9, or look for the hand raise symbol at the bottom of your screen. And I'm just going to wait one more second just to confirm the folks. Right now I see that we have, looks like 7 folks who would like to provide, maybe 8 folks who would like to provide public comment. And we're going to start off with Paul Berkeland, followed by Nick Cady.
Hi, can you all hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. Hey, I had 3 points I wanted to make today. I don't want to take too much of your time. The first point is I wanted to thank you all for your work on the committee. You know, I've served on Citizen Advisory Committee. I know the work creep that happens and how the responsibilities expand and become all-consuming. The work you guys are doing is, you know, not as high profile as what's going on in our streets right now, but it is certainly just as important to the functioning of our democracy. So on behalf of everybody in the state, let me say thank you for the time and the thought that goes into your work. Secondly, I attended the Wolf Committee meeting the other day, and I was really impressed by the thoughtfulness and the discussion that went on. I know you guys are wrestling with several things. I just wanted to make a comment that I was horrified the time that the department wiped out a pack of wolves. I think that was last year. And I just wanted to comment and make sure that we are giving the wolves the benefit of the doubt. They are entirely at our mercy. When we deal with the wolves, we're not just dealing with the population itself. The wolves are a factor in the health of our watersheds, the health of our forest, the health of our other populations and, you know, animal populations in the state. They are just recovering now. We need to give them the benefit of the doubt on every single issue that comes up, rather than the other way around. The third thing I wanted to bring forward is, you know, I hear recovery a lot in the department's work, and I realize that that's a lot of what things are about right now. But as the climate breaks down, the thing we need in the state is resiliency. And that's a buzzword. I do contract work for the Department of Defense, and that's something that they're starting to think about really hard right now. And rather than working toward recovery, we should be working toward resiliency, because the animals in our land, the watersheds, the glaciers, the forest are all part of what we, the people of this state, will need in order to maintain ourselves as the climate continues to break down. And so I don't know what that means as far as your charter to work goes, but I would just ask you to think about, instead of, you know, working toward recovery on things, that we actually aim toward a resilient system that can continue to support us. It just seems a little more proactive and you know, maybe a little more focused on how we move ahead. That's all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Paul. Much appreciated. Next person, Tess?
Sure. All right, we've got
Mary. Mary, can I just make a comment?
Yes, Kim, please.
Commissioner Thorvin, yeah, thanks. Thank you, Paul, for your testimony, and I believe you had trouble. You were going to say something at the Wolf Committee meeting. I know we had problems at one of the meetings. I invite you to participate in the next step of our department's strategic planning. The draft has been released to the public, and we're looking for your input. Your comments are so relevant. And I think the issue of resiliency the need for climate change, the need for acting on the state's wildlife action plan, which recognizes that need for resiliency, is really called out in that plan. And your comments, your review and comments would be very useful. So thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else? Okay, Tess, next person.
All right, Nick Cady's up, followed by Virginia Haver.
Good morning, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can, yeah.
Chair and commissioners and director, my name is Nick Cady. I'm the legal director of Cascadia Wildlands. And I am testifying this morning regarding our rulemaking petition around wolves that's currently before you. And I know the petition is a little large and there's a lot in there. So I just wanted to give you a very brief summary of the idea behind it. The idea is that this rulemaking petition would not undo any of the department's good work around the cooperative agreements, implementing non-lethal measures to prevent wolf-livestock conflict, nor is the idea to replace or undo the work of the Wolf Advisory Group. The idea is to strengthen these programs and give the department additional leverage when dealing with livestock producers. The petition will simply capture the lethal protocol that exists already in rule and add as a prerequisite to state lethal control that the producer be signed up in a cooperative agreement with the department. This incentivizes non-lethals among those producers reluctant to sign up into cooperative agreements. We believe this would go a long way to addressing what we perceive as a hole in the department's current wolf program that certain ranches have exploited and, to be honest, kind of given the department a black eye. I just wanted to give you that very brief summary. Thank you very much. I don't want to take up any more of your time.
Any questions from commissioners of Mr. Cady? Hearing none, thank you very much, Nick.
Thank you.
Next person, Tess.
All right, Virginia Haver, followed by David Lynn.
Hi, my name is Virginia Haver, and I'm just currently retired. I'm just a regular citizen. My background is in biochemistry and quality management. I worked at the Veterans Hospital for about 30 years. So I'm grounded in science, as I imagine most of you are, and I value it as well. And I'm also, I'll also add that I'm a volunteer ranger in the summertime, as I love the outdoors. And so the reason I'm contacting you is I'm also concerned, as the prior two callers, about the wolf recovery in Washington. I think that few animals evoke the wild like the wolves. They're majestic and intelligent, and they're crucial in balancing ecosystems, as we've heard from the other speakers. The recovery in Yellowstone being a prime example of how so many other species benefited from their presence. You know, that the songbirds and beavers, pronghorns and foxes benefited as the wolves helped control those populations of the elk, the overpopulation by the elk and the coyotes. And it seems to me in Washington, we have a growing but still vulnerable population. The wolves need Washington and the West Coast if populations are going to fully recover. We've got these small pockets in the Northern Rockies and the Great Lakes, but they're not enough for the genetic diversity that I think is needed long term. Now, I support compensation for ranchers who are doing the right things and yet lose a livestock to a wolf, but I also think there are ranchers out there that aren't doing the right things, and I like these ideas and ways to try to keep them accountable, because I think we should, and you should, as wildlife commissioners, hold those accountable. People that may leave dead carcasses around or leave cattle near known wolf dens, or who do not even attempt any non-lethal means before trying to kill a wolf. It just doesn't seem right. Now, you all talk to each other. We know there are success stories of coexistence out there. You have access to research. I'm happy to hear, excuse me, that you may be contacting some specialists at the University of Washington, because I'm no expert in this, but you guys can share information about what's worked. And we know there are areas where there has been success, even areas outside Yellowstone, where conflict has been minimized with wolves using non-lethal means, using more herd instinct and keeping them together, grazing them over one area and then moving them to another. Anyways, I just wanted to say that I think for a healthy environment, we need connected habitats, and we need to all learn to coexist, whether we're black or white or wolf or rancher. We're intelligent, and they're intelligent, and I think we ought to be able to figure out some way so that both ranchers and wolves can coexist. So thank you. I just hope that this commission will continue to push for and examine more non-lethal means to manage the wolf conflicts. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your comments, Virginia. Any comments or questions from the commission? Thank you for calling in, Virginia. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next person, Tess?
Sure. David Lynn, followed by Amarok West. And David, you're going to have to look for that mute button on your end, I think, as well. Oh, and David, I see that you may have lowered your hand, but I still cannot hear you. So just want to give you one couple more seconds to find the unmute button. Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores. I'm representing myself in support of wildlife and wild places. Over the past 2.5 years, I have made numerous presentations to the commission during the open public comment periods. Most of these have concerned wolf recovery in our state and have concerned failures in the department's wolf-livestock interaction protocol. And I commonly made the statement that the protocol was deeply flawed. This was clearly evidenced by the continual killing of our wolves. And I emphasize the word killing should be used, not euphemisms such as lethal removal, harvested, or euthanized, which seek to minimize the brutality of such killing. It seems it is the only thing the department knew how to do to deal with wolves. During this time, I've also followed the activities of the Wolf Advisory Group, the WAG, and their work toward creating and revising the protocol. However, over the past year, it seems a lot has been accomplished other than trying to define the role of a range rider. All the while, the killing continued. While the formula for commencing the killing of wolves was well-defined, we were told that it was only a guideline and that the director would not be bound by those hard numbers and would use discretion. Yet we observed that as soon as any part of the threshold was crossed, the helicopter gunships were immediately sent up on their deadly mission with indiscriminate killing of pups, breeding females, and alpha males. Finally, last September, the governor heard the voices of his constituents and sent a letter to the director in which he stated that this continued killing was acceptable and other methods of dealing with conflicts must be found. Since the governor is the only person in this entire process who is elected by the people, his statement should be taken seriously, and to do otherwise would be irresponsible. One else is appointed in one fashion or another and take their direction from the governor. It appears that in the most recent conflicts, the department has heard the governor and is working on conflict resolution without resorting to killing our wolves. They are to be commended for that. I recently read the petition to the commissioners from several environmental groups that have a detailed and realistic proposal to deal with the wolf livestock conflict. I believe it should be seriously studied by the commissioners and positively acted upon. It accomplishes all the goals that were set out for the WAG but not accomplished. Adopting this proposal would finally set forth a practical and realistic program for dealing with the wolf livestock conflict. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn. Appreciate your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Next person, Tess.
All right. Next we have Amarok West, followed by Robert Sudar.
Can you hear me?
We can. Yeah.
Wonderful. Chair Carpenter, members of the commission, good morning. My name is Amarok Weiss. I am a senior West Coast wolf advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. I'm a biologist and former attorney and have nearly 23 years experience and wolf recovery work in Washington, Oregon, and California. Before I start my intended remarks, Commissioner Thorburn, I just want to thank you for your remarks on the significant social, societal changes which must happen to ensure social and environmental justice for Black lives in this country, including the conservation work that we all do. My comments today regard the administrative petition for wolf management rulemaking, which Nick Cady and several others have already discussed in their own comments. Washington's management of livestock wolf conflicts has been a disordered, tumultuous state of affairs. It's been confusing, emotionally fraught, and filled with turmoil and multiple lawsuits, 4 in just the last 3 years. It doesn't have to be that way. Look to the south, to Oregon. Oregon's experience with having rules for the state wildlife agency's wolf management, especially for livestock wolf conflicts, has resulted in exactly what everyone wants for Washington: transparency, accountability, enforceability, a reduction in public anger, livestock wolf conflicts, and agency killing of wolves, and increased public trust in the state wildlife agency. Now, I previously lived in Oregon, where I was a commission-appointed stakeholder advising the state wildlife agency in crafting its state wolf plan. The stakeholders in the agency felt that having some parts of the plan be enforceable through rulemaking had merit, and the State Fish and Wildlife Commission agreed. So when it adopted the wolf plan in 2005, the Oregon Commission also adopted rules through a public process. Things proceeded smoothly until 2011, when the agency ignored key provisions of the plan and the rules and raced to kill wolves prematurely. This prompted a lawsuit. Settlement negotiations between the agency, the Cattlemen's Association, and conservation groups resulted in agreed upon new rules that the commission then enacted. And things have gone smoothly since then. While not all parties have agreed with everything the agency has done over the years, there have been no more lawsuits over agency wolf killings. Oregon's wolf population is now 5.5 times what it was in 2011, but the annual livestock wolf conflicts have not increased commensurately, and in some years have been significantly less. Last year's population in Oregon's wolves increased by 15% from the year prior, but conflicts decreased by 43%. Because of Oregon's rules, many more livestock operators have worked with agency staff to implement non-lethal conflict deterrence. Everyone knows what's required before wolves can be killed, and the public hysteria has subsided. So when you meet on June 26th to discuss and evaluate our petition for rulemaking, please include in your deliberations consideration of how things could be instead. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. Tess, next person, please.
All right, we have Robert Sudar, followed by a phone number ending in 5862.
Thank you, commissioners. This is Robert Sudar from Longview, Columbia River Commercial Advisor. I want to talk to you today about RCWs. I hear a lot of discussion in our various meetings about RCW 77.04.02, and that it allows talks about one industry in the commercial fishing and recreational, and about the ability to move harvest levels around within that one industry. But I want to let you know that there's another RCW that actually came out the year after that one, RCW 77.50.120. It's still an active RCW, came from the legislature unanimously in 2001. And in part, it says it is the intent of the legislature to ensure that a sustainable level of salmon is made available for harvest for commercial fishers in the state. And it goes on to say, without a stable level of harvest, fishers cannot develop niche markets that maximize the economic value of the harvest. It also says there are experimental types of commercial fishing gear that could allow fishers to stabilize harvest levels by selectively targeting healthy salmon stocks. When this came out, we were working on the Columbia River to develop tangle nets and recovery boxes in order to be able to selectively harvest spring Chinook, where there's a high percentage of hatchery fish compared to wild fish. And that was one of the items behind this legislative intent. And since then, the current policy has basically removed most of our, if not all of our, spring opportunity. I've talked to a legislator who was involved in this development, and I think that this is in view of what's happening on the Columbia and Willapaw and Grays Harbor, in the policies and how onerous they are for the opportunity to have continued commercial fishing, I think the commission needs to look back at this RCW and what it says, when it came out, what the intentions were of the legislature. I often hear the department spokespeople say that they do whatever the legislature intends them to do. I don't think this has ever come up in the last 8 years in our conversations about sharing Columbia River, Willapaw, Grays Harbor salmon. As I've said many times, I'm not interested in having only commercial fishing. It's a resource that should be shared by many user groups. And if there's fish available for one user group, there should be fish available for both user groups. So I encourage you to look at this RCW in light and then look at your policies in light of what it says. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate you calling in. Any comments from the commission? Okay. Thank you very much. Tess, who's next?
All right. Next, we have a phone number ending in 5862, followed by Greg King.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
They can see my name.
Awesome. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Jocelyn LaRue, and I'm the Washington, Montana Director for Western Watersheds Project. I'm a member of the coalition that submitted a rulemaking petition to require the use of non-lethal techniques to reduce livestock-wolf conflict. Today, I'm going to briefly discuss why jumping straight to lethal removal is an inappropriate management technique and why the enforceable non-lethal requirements outlined in our petition are necessary. So far, the department has a poor track record of adhering to the expectations of the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan and has an ever-increasing pile of wolf carcasses in Northeast Washington to show for their management efforts thus far. Although the department has met with public outcry each time they proceed with a kill order, they've continued to lethally remove wolves from the same places year after year. They do this despite the plan's acknowledgement that the best available science shows that lethal control measures generally have limited or even no effect in reducing the recurrence of depredation, and that lethal control instead serves only to prevent the full recovery of wolf populations. Overwhelmingly, the science describes that non-lethal deterrence measures, such as those laid out in our petition, are more effective in the long term at reducing wolf-livestock conflict and may, in fact, be more cost-effective than lethal removal as well. As is evidenced by the department's own experience in the Colville National Forest, lethal removal of wolves is a short-term solution. Especially in habitat that's as good as the Colville National Forest, new wolves will colonize the territory that's been vacated by lethal removal, and this starts the cycle all over again. The lethal removal of wolves following conflict with livestock is not a scientifically supported management technique, and in Washington, it's a leading cause of death for this state endangered species. So instead of continuing to utilize this outdated and cruel form of management to attempt to control Washington's native wildlife, I ask that you consider the tools provided in our petition to instead focus on what can be changed, such as animal husbandry techniques and lethal department intervention. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the consideration of our petition.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Appreciate your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none, moving on. Tess, thank you for the note. Next person.
Yes, next is Greg King, followed by Rain Adaman.
Good morning, Commissioner Chair Carpenter, Commission and Director Suslin. I'm not upset about getting cut off yesterday. That's fine. I know you guys had a lot on your plate. What I'm going to address, what I didn't get to address yesterday was HSRG. And I just want to remind, and I'm glad I get to speak in front of the full commission, because I'd like to remind the full commission about experiment we started in 1984, and that was to clip hatchery fish, and we were going to recover wild salmon and steelhead on the Columbia River, spring chinook and steelhead. That experiment failed. We just don't have the habitat. The dams have taken away a lot of habitat in the Columbia River. We did, though, late 1980s, we supplemented summer chinook in the Columbia River, and that was successful using hatchery fish. Since then, we did the Johnson experiment, which was success with hatchery fish in the conservation hatchery. But I'm going to lean more towards the Cowlitz River. In 1994, after the construction of Falls Dam, Friends of the Cowlitz was part of a Project Genesis. And we introduced salmon and steelhead above the dams. Due to passage problem, there's no fish passage on the Callis River. Three dams and no fish passage. So it was another experiment with hatchery fish. Total hatchery fish experiment. And slowly we have improved on turbines and down migration and collection, and even talking with looking at this letter to NOAA from Steve Manlow and Lower Columbia River Recovery Board, you can see where coho could be delisted in the next 5 to 10 years. Now, all these experiments on the Callis River were done with hatchery fish. So I believe, and a lot of us believe, that if we're going to recover fish, we have to use hatchery fish, because that's all we have. We don't have a great amount of wild fish, if any at all, in the Columbia River Basin. The we can redo habitat's great. We want to improve on our habitat, do we have fish to go in that habitat? We got hatchery fish to go in that habitat. We're starting to see some good things with spring chinook in the Upper Callis Basin. That's very promising. So just to reduce hatchery production and listen to some of this HSRG stuff that isn't working, you know, great try HSRG. It's a tool, not a rule. We've heard all of this stuff. We have to use what tool we have, and that's hatchery fish for reintroduction. You know, and I just want to make this last statement, and I'll let you guys go. There's a lot of money in recovery. There's no money in recovered. So I believe, and a lot of us believe, that we can recover fish with hatchery fish. It's proven on the Callis River. Just look into it. Thank you. That's my testimony today.
Greg, thank you for your testimony. We gave you an extra minute because yesterday you were shorted a little bit, but thank you for your call. Any questions from the commission members? Okay, thank you very much. Tess, next.
All right, Rain Adaman, followed by Sophia Ressler.
Good morning. My name is Rain Adaman. I represent Washington Environmental Council as the Puget Sound Campaign's manager. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment today and for all your work on behalf of our state's fish and wildlife. Yesterday, I received a press release about WDFW's new strategic plan, asking the public where the agency should focus and invest in fish and wildlife efforts in the next 25 years. With strong leadership from Director Sue Swin, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and committed conservation-minded staff, I am hopeful to see significant attention and strategies in the conservation of fish and wildlife species, especially those that are listed as threatened, critical, or endangered, such as the southern resident orca population. It has been 8 months since the Governor Inslee's Orca Recovery Task Force issued their 2-year report and recommendations. At that time, the task force ceased to exist. However, that does not mean that our work to implement those actions need to subside or stop. In fact, the list of 49 different recommendations need to be acted on now and into the near future. It is a long list of actions because the need is so great. Of these recommendations, 16 are related to increasing salmon availability, which is the primary food base for the southern residents. 13 are related to decreasing noise and disturbance. 9 are related to decreasing pollution. 5 are focused on funding, monitoring, and adapting as we go. 5 are related to climate change. And 1 is related to addressing future population growth. A lot of work to do indeed. But needed. But how are we faring right now? WEC, or Washington Environmental Council, who was the task force member, took a quick assessment of those recommendations. And as of today, we figure that 6 of them would be characterized as doing well, and we will accomplish 8 that are substantially underway, and we are making progress and moving in right direction. 3 that are intended to go in the right direction, but have not made progress. and 32 actions that we have not yet started, but realize that ORCA recovery is a long-term effort with both near-term and long-term actions that are needed. And there are various pathways and responsibilities by agencies, legislature, and the public to act on these recommendations, including actions from the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Recently, the commission adopted new rule changes to the hydraulic project approval permitting process focused on improving nearshore habitat protections for salmon, which was one of the important pieces of the puzzle for ORCA recovery to increase prey availability. So thank you for that work and the decisiveness on that issue. Collectively, we need to continue to implement these actions if we are going to successfully achieve the task force's recovery goal of 84 orcas in the next 10 years, a legacy we can all be proud of. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Adamant, for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none, thank you very much, sir. Tess, who's next?
Next, we have Sophia Ressler, followed by Chris Bachman.
Good morning, commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Sophia Ressler, and I'm an attorney and the Washington Wildlife Advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity. I am testifying today regarding the administrative petition for rulemaking on wolf management that the center and others submitted in May. We provided the commission with supplemental materials in support of our petition that I'd like to discuss in my testimony. The documentation regarding the 2016 removal of the Profanity Peak Pack helps to highlight several issues our rule would address and eliminate. Specifically, these records show the date the department became aware of the location of the den site and the existence of pups, and that the department knew about repeated proximity of wolves and cattle. However, even armed with this information, the department failed to remove salt blocks from the area of the known den and rendezvous sites until 5.5 weeks after they had become aware of their locations. Removal only occurred because of department concerns that cattle would get caught in traps set to kill wolves. This was a failure to proactively deter conflict, allowed for cattle to continue to be drawn to wolves' high-use areas, and directly resulted in the unnecessary deaths of both livestock and wolves. Rules pertaining to den and rendezvous sites and requiring the removal of salt blocks are necessary to prevent these situations. Department notes taken during internal meetings show staff conclusions that decisions regarding the removal of wolves are political and not biological, and that field staff recommendations are being overruled for political reasons. This is abhorrent and completely unacceptable, and shows a dire need for accountability and transparency in the way the public's wildlife is being managed. Much of the conflict surrounding wolves and wolf management has occurred in the Kettle Range, where 3 packs have been killed for the same livestock owner. The department has chosen to kill wolves while acknowledging in internal meetings that quality range riding has never been done in that area, and with the acute awareness that this area is prime wolf habitat and will continuously be inhabited by wolves. In fact, there's already a new pack in the same area where the previous 3 were killed, and allowing the new kettle pack to succumb to the same fate would be a disgrace on this department. And yet, cattle have been turned out to graze, the WAG has not dealt with the topic of chronic conflict zones, and we seem to be proceeding with business as usual. The commission must vote to initiate rulemaking to codify enforceable rules on wolf management. This horrible pattern has to stop, and this is the path forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophia. Appreciate your comments. Any questions from the commission?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Kehoe.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, so I don't have a question for the for Ms. Ressler, but you know, we've had several people testify concerning this petition. You know, we've all seen the petition. Just curious, has this, is the commission scheduled to take action on this petition yet? And if so, when?
Hey, Bob, this is Nikki. June 26th is when the commission meets next, and we're addressing the petition then.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Tess, next person. How many more do we have left, Tess?
Yeah, we did get a couple more hands. So I'm just going to read the last five that we've got on deck here, which we have Chris Bachman, or six, trying to squeeze in here at the bit, but we've got time. So thanks for getting your hand up. Chris Bachman, Samantha Brueger, Karen Flood, Sharon Burke, Marie Newmiller, and Nick Kowalczyk.
Okay, continue on, please.
Chris, you're up, and Samantha, you're on deck.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. My name is Chris Bachman. I'm the Wildlife Program Director at the Lands Council based in Spokane. I would like to start by putting into the record that public comment wasn't scheduled to begin until 9:30, and there may be folks that wanted to comment that will not be able to since you did start early. My comment, I'm following the court cases in King County. King County Superior Court documents over the 2019 killing of the OPT wolf pack. In those, the department in their reply brief has taken the position that it can kill wolves for livestock conflicts even if no responsive non-lethal measures were used to try to stop conflict following the initial wolf-caused predation. The 2017 protocol lists the minimum threshold of conditions that must be met before it may consider killing wolves for livestock conflict. It requires the department to work with the livestock producers to proactively identify and implement two non-lethal conflict deterrence measures suitable for that operator's livestock operation on the landscape. It also provides that after an initial wolf-caused predation, the department will work with the affected livestock operator to identify and implement responsive, non-lethal measures to try to avert additional conflict. In 2019, department conflict specialists repeatedly asked Diamond M Ranch for permission to deploy department range riders as a responsive deterrent measure following a predation by the OPT pack. They refused, leaving their cattle unprotected. Rather than sticking to the protocol, the department agreed to kill wolves anyway, eventually eliminating the entire OPT pack in the summer of 2019. In the response brief filed by the Attorney General's office on behalf of the department in May, the department contends the protocol only requires two non-lethal measures and that if two measures have been proactively used, no responsive measures will be required. That passage referenced in the protocol actually states at least two proactive deterrence measures and responsive deterrence measures, plural, responsive deterrence measures. And it's an and not an or. So you can hear it states that the responsive deterrent measures must be used. So the interpretation by the petitioners that a total of four, two proactive and two reactive, is correct. The 2019 OPT pack removal also, the department accepted Diamond M's unverified claims and counted the following as three separate non-lethals: calving in an area outside of the summer grazing allotment, turning out calves later when they weighed more, weighed at least 200 pounds, and turning out livestock later in the season after wild ungulates have been born. And I think we can all agree that that's truly one action, turning out calves slightly later in the year when they're slightly larger in the hope they'll be less vulnerable. That's not three deterrents. Additionally, there's a number of internal department documents revealed in the discovery of the same court case that show the department decided to kill the pack when it knew it was not following protocol. There's memos that state that there's never been effective range riding in the area. I've attended numerous WAG meetings, and what I hear there is very different than what I'm reading in these court documents. The department represents to the WAG that it's two appropriate non-lethals and responsive measures. So if you wonder why public trust is lacking or at a minimum, like in an advanced state of erosion, this is literally the case in point. The department is repeatedly making alternate cases, talking out both sides of its mouth when it's interpreting policy to fit its immediate need without really considering the long-term implications. Additionally, and this is a sort of side note, I listened in on the grazing presentation yesterday, and one of the top noted killers of ungulates discussed in the presentation was malnutrition. And the department is currently looking at grazing, its grazing guidelines, and allowing livestock to graze. So if livestock grazing is actually depleting ungulate food, it might be a good idea to find documentation and peer-reviewed science that demonstrates that livestock grazing is not a factor in ungulate malnutrition. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Bachman. Any questions or comments from the commission? Okay, Tess, next, please.
Next, we've got Samantha, followed by Karen. And we do have up through 10:30 for this public comment So if we did miss somebody earlier, because we did start a couple minutes, thank you for that, Chris. We are raising hands to provide public comment.
Thanks for that explanation, Tess. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. My name is Samantha Brueger. I am the Wildlife Coexistence Campaigner for one of the groups who was on the rulemaking petition, Wild Earth Guardians. I also represent 310 Washington residents who wrote letters to the commission in support of new rules that better protect wolves. Today, I wanted to go over the efficacy of non-lethal deterrence. Non-lethal deterrents are far more effective than the sledgehammer approach that we have seen the department use repeatedly on wolves. As we know, wolves are social creatures who live in family-like structures. Killing one member of the family throws the pack into chaos, causing an increase in depredations. In fact, Washington addresses the efficacy of non-lethal management on page 72 of its own wolf management plan, stating that two recent analyses of long-term lethal control of wolves found that removals generally have limited or no effect in reducing the recurrence of depredation. Even more new research shows that killing wolves is the wrong approach to deterring conflict. It can even result in the remaining wolves moving to neighboring ranches and or allotments and having conflicts with livestock there. A recent paper also analyzed the results of 140 different studies worldwide and concluded that the only method which has any scientifically proven success to deter conflicts between livestock and wolves are non-lethal methods. Unfortunately, Washington has not been able to witness the efficacy of non-lethals for themselves as WDFW continues to kill entire packs of wolves for the livestock industry. Most recently, in 2019, rather than require Diamond M, for whom 26 wolves have been killed, to use WDFW range riders, the department allowed the corporate cattleman to refuse non-lethal assistance and killed the entire OPT pack in 2019 in a misguided attempt to protect private livestock. This is unacceptable. Current rules have created a cycle of killing wolves to kill more wolves year after year. We know that effective non-lethal measures preserve the public asset of wolves while best protecting the private asset of cattle. Wild Earth Guardians looks forward to new rules that require the use of non-lethals and managed for wolves owned by all over cattle owned by few. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Samantha. Any questions from the commission?
Larry, I have a question.
Commissioner Baker.
Thank you for your comments, Samantha. We try to keep up on the science regarding all the work that we do, but I don't believe I've read the paper that you referred to. So I was wondering if you could send it in and let us see it.
Yeah, and it's cited also in our rulemaking petition, so it's in there too. But I can send over a bunch of new research that's came out over to Melissa.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Tess, next person, please.
Yes, Karen, you're up next, followed by Sharon Burke. And Karen, I think you've got to look for that unmute on your end as well. And we are still not quite hearing you, Karen. So if you can look for the little microphone symbol that is down in the lower left.
Tess, could we maybe go on to the next one and then yeah. Come back to Karen?
Yeah. Next, we have Sharon Burke, followed by Marie Newmiller.
Yes, my name is Sharon Burke. I'm a Seattle citizen, a concerned citizen. I thank you for the opportunity of making these comments. Science has clearly shown that biodiversity is critical to maintaining a healthy planet. Therefore, we should be doing everything we can to prevent the extinction of animals and plants. Research has identified wolves as a keystone predator necessary for maintaining healthy forests and prairies. I cannot support the killing of wolves for any reason, but particularly for the reason of being a nuisance to livestock ranchers and hunters. Cattle ranchers are a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, not to mention the health concerns of eating too much meat. If we are going to save the planet from the coming disaster of climate change, we need to decrease the amount of livestock ranches. Cattle ranches and industrial agriculture in general are the real threats here, not wolves. Another excuse for killing wolves is that they reduce the amount of deer and elk that hunters wish to kill for sport. To me, that's morally wrong to kill animals merely so that humans can kill other animals for entertainment. We should have a goal of increasing the amount of wolves in Washington State. And more importantly, we need to set aside more land for wildlife as one of the many strategies to stave off a climate disaster that will bring societal upheaval on a level we can barely imagine. I hope that you will maintain a more far-sighted vision for federal land so that our country is not destroyed by climate crisis and environmental degradation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, for your comments. Questions from the commission? Hearing none. Tess, next, please.
Sure. Next, we've got Marie, followed by Nick Kovalsik.
Hello, can everybody hear me?
We can. Yeah.
Great. My name's Marie Newmiller, and I represent the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. I understand that this time of year brings heated discussion on wolf and livestock conflicts that are being worked on. However, I wanted to speak today because our group has concerns about ungulate populations. As was highlighted in the committee meetings this week, our ungulate populations were hurt by the 2015 droughts and the preceding hard winters. Many regional herds are struggling to recover, and an explosion of uncontrolled predator numbers can complicate this recovery. Our group is encouraged by the department's current management processes, including efforts like the predator prey study and the appointment of Steve Prezanga to his new position in the Northeast. We hope that we will soon reach a point where wolves can be managed as other Washington state predators are through a science-based conservation model. Our volunteers stand ready and eager to help with conservation in our state through habitat improvement, stakeholder discussions, and education, as well as any other way that we can assist the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie, for your comments. Questions from the commission? Hearing none. Next, Tess.
All right. Next, we have Nick, followed by Patty Tubner.
Hello, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Hi, my name is Nicholas Kovalchik. I'm a volunteer at the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle. And I would just like to make the comment of, at least from my point of view, as someone that may be a lay person to these matters, that it definitely seems like this is an issue where there are people on either side that feel very strongly about this. And I myself am of the opinion that wolves should not be killed on behalf of ranchers that would not cooperate and take every reasonable measure necessary to prevent wolf livestock depredation and conflict. But I would hope that moving forward, you know, we're able to at least talk to each other civilly and be able to continue these types of discussions and keep working on what we can do better, knowing that yeah, each side is probably not going to get what they want entirely, but I just think it's definitely important that we keep these discussions ongoing, and we're either side is able to keep an open mind as to what we could do better and what works and what doesn't. And maybe by the end of all that, you know, we're able to end up in a place where we get some of what we want. And that's all my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Next, Tess?
Yes. Next, we have Patty, followed by Sandy Labowitz.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. My name's Patty Tubner, and I am a resident of Kirkland, Washington. I just wanted to weigh in with my opinions regarding the wolf policies. And I was going to ask that you please don't allow hunters and livestock owners to determine state policies regarding wolves. Washington needs to allow its wolf populations to increase in order to enhance the whole ecosystems that they live in. By using best available science, they can protect both the wolf populations and livestock, as has been shown in Oregon and other places. We can and should coexist with wolves. Please adopt enforceable, transparent regulations for wolf recovery and conservation. Thank you.
Patty, thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Tess, next, please.
Yes, we're going to proceed to Sandy, and then we're going to try connecting with Karen again after Sandy.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Sandy. Can you hear me?
We can.
Great. I'm a Washington State constituent. I live in Seattle, and I am also concerned about the policies of the Department of Fish and Wildlife's control of our wolf population. I have kept informed as best I could on the work of Washington's Wolf Advisory Group, and I'm grateful for the work this group is committed to. For years, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has allowed the killing of wolves, a great deal of them, on public lands on behalf of the same for-profit livestock operation up in northwest Washington, which has refused to adequately watch over their cattle. Science, as other people have mentioned, shows that non-lethal measures work best to deter wolf and livestock conflicts, but the department seems to not adhere to this to the degree that science shows they should. They just keep killing wolves, sometimes destroying whole packs. Killing wolves should be a measure of very last resort and should never happen on public lands. I do not want my tax dollars to subsidize the meat production of this country any more than it already has to. And I don't have a choice about that. We all remember last fall, Governor Jay Inslee called this wolf killing unacceptable and directed the agency to emphasize non-lethal measures. But the public has heard nothing more about this and has no assurance or evidence that that this is happening. And another deadly season ahead. We need to hear your plan, which takes Governor Inslee's directive into account. Secondly, and urgently important, I am disturbed with the agreement the Attorney General is currently reviewing, which will allow, for the first time ever, County Sheriff's Department to trap wolves. This would set a dangerous precedent for future management to fall on counties that support their ranchers residing in their county and don't hold Washington State's same values and conservation interests. Management of our state's wildlife must remain within the state wildlife department as a public trust. While this was not stated by the WDFW, Sheriff Brad Menke of the Stevens County Sheriff's Department has said, and it was quoted in an article, that he hopes this will lead to the Sheriff's Department eventually being allowed to sedate and collar wolves. This agreement must not be approved. Thank you for taking my thoughts and opinions into consideration for this very important concern.
Sandy, thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Tess, the next person, please.
Sure. Karen, I've got you unmuted. Oh, and it looks like you're unmuted on your end.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I had a little trouble with my technology. For hearing from all
this. I support the before me. I have been emails from the department, and I've noticed that the predation primarily centers on calves, and I guess that now the standard weight for releasing calves into wolf areas is 200 pounds, and I've been in and around this for a while, and I know cow is still a very small animal and very vulnerable, and calves tend to wander away a lot and are not very.
And it looked like she just dropped off here, unfortunately.
The audio was not great.
No, connection where she is not good.
Is there anyone else pending, or is that the last caller?
That was the last person I'm seeing right now that has their hand up.
Okay. Well, I guess we can wait a minute. We're a little bit ahead of schedule. Does anyone feel needed to take a 5-minute break, and we can come back and see if the lady's back on, and then we can go to Kelly Director's report? Your thoughts, folks?
I would like that.
Yeah, that'd be good, Larry. And also, I think that caller mentioned that she'd sent an email in to the department, and I would encourage her to do that, to follow up with a written comment if we're not able to connect with her. I believe she can probably still hear us.
Yeah, that's a good idea, David. Appreciate that. Okay, it's now 10:08. Let's come back at 10:15 if we could.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Thank you. before, did the lady that we had, that dropped off Tess, did she reconnect in any way?
I am not seeing her back on at this point, but I have her information because of the registration, so we'll definitely let her know to send in written comments as well.
Okay. Before we go to Kelly, and thank you for the prompt, it's my understanding that the department's contract with Ross Strategic expires the end of this this month, and from my perspective, I think it's worked out really well, Tess, to you and your colleagues. I really appreciated your help. I've learned a lot. In many ways, we're going to miss you. And if others want to weigh in, please feel free. But